Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Lucas Matney.
Well, thank you for joining us for the very first time, Lucas.
I appreciate being here. I watch so much TV, but talk about it so little in public.
Really? I feel like it dominates like most of my conversations.
I don't know. I feel like it's kind of this like cave I retreat into. But so it's nice to kind of share some of my insights at this point.
Well, we're excited. I hope they're good. I hope they are in accordance with my own thoughts and opinions. Okay, so what's our first bit of news, Anthony? Our only bit of news, I guess.
Yeah, the only bit of news. So we should say that for people who haven't listened, you know, the way we do the show is we recap some of the streaming news from the past week, and then we'll do an in-depth review. This week, we're going to talk about the fifth season of Arrested Development. But before that, we're going to talk about this story that Lucas wrote, which is about The Expanse, a show that I know Jordan likes, was canceled by Sci-Fi, but has been picked up by Amazon.
It's fantastic news. Have you been watching The Expanse, Lucas?
No. So yeah, like all good journalistic publications, the person writing the article is often the most knowledgeable. In this case, I have never seen The Expanse.
Oh my gosh.
But I am fully aware that it is picked up for a fourth season by Amazon.
After, good.
You know? I think I ramble on for about 40 more words in my article.
Yeah, short and sweet on this one. But yeah, I mean, The Expanse is great. I feel like, I mean, we've talked about this a little bit before. Sci-Fi has struggled a little bit as a network to kind of figure out what works and what draws in a larger audience. They did it with Battlestar Galactica like a decade ago, and they finally got this on their hands. And what I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lucas, unless you don't know, but I heard that they only got first run rights, Sci-Fi. So, like, people who are watching it on Amazon Prime or, you know, people who are watching it through iTunes or whatever that might be, they weren't, like, making any money off of it, which is a big problem because The Expanse is actually, like, fantastic television, has a pretty big audience. So, whatever works, whatever gets it on my TV screen is fine by me. I'm glad that Amazon saw the opportunity. And I just think it's a fantastic show.
As someone who has never really like taken sci-fi seriously in the slightest, like what makes the show special, I guess?
Wow. Okay. There's nothing from the sci-fi genre you appreciate? Like what have you seen from that?
No, that I mean world? Just the network itself,
the network,
not the,
yeah.
Not the genre, definitely.
Okay. Yeah. That's fair. So I don't know how old you were when Battlestar Galactica was coming out. Do you know what Battlestar Galactica is or what?
I've vaguely heard of it. It's one of those references that is like always pops up in Reddit comments that I'm always a little lost on.
Right. Or in The Office. Yeah. So like, I think that Battlestar Galactica and The Expanse are very different plot lines. The Expanse is based around humans have colonized Earth, Mars, and the asteroid belt and the moon. And they are three separate kind of independently-ish run governments, and they are fighting just like, you know, humans have done since the beginning of time. And you follow a lot of different characters based on different planets or in the belt or what have you, as they kind of figure out how to stop war or fight in the war or, you know, bring peace to the solar system or whatever their goals might be. And there is a touch of, you know, it starts like the first 5 or 10 episodes or so aren't really focused on anything other than that and just kind of establishing what life is like in space. It's a very human story. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, but Battlestar Galactica did the same thing. Battlestar Galactica is based on, you know, humans created AI called the Cylons. The Cylons and humans got in a fight. Cylons left. And 40 years later, they came back and wanted to kill their creators. And while that sounds very sci-fi-ish, the story itself was told in a very human way. Like you could kind of relate it to any other drama on television. And you'd get the same kind of feels and same kind of dialogue and characters. they're just happen to be in space fighting Cylons. And this is very similar. Like, you have human relationships at stake. You have humans questioning who they are in this universe and, like, what they want to do with their lives, what they believe in, what they were going to stand up for. And yes, it's based in space, and there's lots of, like, cool space fights and, you know, zero gravity and potential alien life and all of those things that happen in a sci-fi show, but done in a human way. And that's what, like, Sci-Fi Network has been trying to replicate since Battlestar Galactica. And they finally got it, and it was through, you know, licensing this book series. And they did a really good job. Good casting, like, you know, good actors, like it just all the way through is really, really great and keeps you kind of on the edge of your seat, even the parts that are kind of far fetched. And it's too bad they couldn't hold on to it, you know, like,
yeah, I mean, I wonder what that was, if like they're just like blowing their entire budget into, you know, working with this show, because I can't imagine that, like, you know, lesser viewership numbers for Sci-Fi Network than usual is like something that this would be struggling with if it's as good as you say.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was available on Amazon Prime, and that's the thing. Like, we're in a VOD, you know, world now, and people first, you have to like bet big on this stuff, and you have to get rights to the replays and to the on-demand stuff, and you have to kind of hold on and wait for something like a season three where people, it's kind of reached a critical mass of people talking about it and people being excited about it. People who have read the books are evangelizing, and they just couldn't hold on. They couldn't see, you know, kind of the beyond the horizon, so to speak. So too bad for them, but good for us.
Well, I think one other thing that's interesting about the news is that, you know, in general, Jeff Bezos isn't, you know, involved in a lot of these announcements around, you know, Amazon's video content. There's like a whole team there. I mean, I think he was maybe a little bit involved when they announced the Lord of the Rings stuff, and there's been reports about him sort of pushing for more of this kind of populist direction for the shows. But this actually is an announcement he made himself at the International Space Development Conference. And he's also, I think, well known as a Star Trek fan. So I wonder if this was also a case where there was a business argument, but also, you know, Jeff Bezos just wants a cool space show on Amazon.
Yeah. I have a feeling that you're right about that. I think, you know, I don't know Jeff, obviously, but he's obviously got quite an interest in space with Blue Origins and stuff like that. And I wouldn't be surprised if he really liked the show and was like, no, it must live. Like, it just must. So, I'm really excited. I'm happy for it. I'm going to Israel tonight for the Tel Aviv mobility sessions that's happening next week. And I have all of season three downloaded on my computer. So I'm ready to do some plane viewing, which is fun. You're flying across the ocean and watching about space. And it's a little too real, but it's fun.
Cool. Well, should we move on to our review then?
Yeah, let's do it. Arrested Development.
So maybe the one way we should start, I mean, obviously, so we're going to talk a little bit about our own opinions. Maybe we'll get into some of the headlines around the show, too. Maybe the place to start, though, is just to talk a little bit about our own background with Arrested Development. And since a recurring theme of this podcast is Jordan yelling at Anthony for not watching things, I will admit that I've only seen the first season of Arrested Development before this.
Oh, my God.
What?
What is wrong with you?
I'm just a bad person.
Do you watch, though? Like, I want you to start... No, this is what we're going to do. You're going to start writing down what you're spending your time watching, and I'd like to look at it. Because when you tell me the things that you haven't seen, I want to see what's replacing it. Maybe it's, like, an amazing list, and then I'll be like, okay, cool. Like, you keep making your own choices. Or maybe I'm like, you no longer have the rights to your own viewing decisions.
That'd be amazing if, like, you could just program my my Xbox, and, like, anytime I sit down to watch something, it just plays whatever Jordan has queued up for me.
I don't know if I'm strong enough in computer science. Strong enough is even an overstatement. I will not be able to do that, but I could make you a list of, like, this is what you have to watch before you choose your own adventure. And I might have to, honestly, based on the way things are going. Like, it's looking like I'm going to have to do that. So, Arrested Development for me. You've only seen season one. Did you watch it back in the day, or did you watch it now because we're talking about Arrested Development?
I watched it back in the day, basically, when that first DVD set came out. I basically watched the first season.
And was that your choice, or was someone around you influencing that decision?
Someone was like, this is an amazing show, you should watch it. And I was watched the first season, and I liked it a lot. I don't know if I need to keep going. Here's the DVDs back.
Wow. Okay.
Not that I just liked insulting. It, but I mean, I think people who listen to the show know that, like, I'm very, my attitude is essentially, like, if I like something, I'll watch one season. I'll only keep going if I'm, like, absolutely in love with it.
So you weren't absolutely in love with it after the first season?
No, I liked
it. Which is arguably the best. Like, I think the first season and the second season are probably the best seasons of Arrested Development. I don't think many people would disagree with me on that.
Season two, yeah.
Yeah. So I started watching Arrested Development when I was in college. It was after it had been canceled on Fox. So I was one of the converts. For those of you who don't know, by the way, let's just do a brief recap. Arrested Development seasons 1 through 3 were released on Fox from 2003 to 2006. The show did not get enough viewership. The show was canceled. It was picked up, I think, on, like, you know, as Netflix and Amazon Prime and stuff came around, it found its way onto those platforms, but it really was like a DVD thing back in the day. And I watched it religiously in college with my friends. We loved it, like loved it. We watched it over and over and over again. It was so funny. And there's so many jokes that you miss. It's one of those shows you can watch over and over again. And then was really sad that there was no more of it. Season 4 came out 2 years ago, I think, on Netflix after Netflix bought it and kind of retooled it. It was not so good. They did, like, all these people, you know, you forget back then Michael Cera wasn't like a thing. Like, he was just this kid that they cast in Arrested Development, went on to be very famous. Like, you know, Will Arnett, I think it was still very early in his career. I'm not entirely sure about that, but there are a lot of big names on here that really got their start or got big being on Arrested Development. And, when they shot season 4, none of them had a schedule that permitted them to be around each other really too much. So they did individual character episodes to drive the plot forward, and it just didn't really work out. They remixed those, is what they called it. They re-edited them to make a little bit more sense and, you know, bring the story together a little bit more. I haven't watched the remix, so that's my fault. And then now season 5 is out, which is kind of getting back to its roots a little bit more. So that's the recap. But I loved Arrested Development. It was one of my favorite shows. And I'm glad that season 5 is an improvement on season 4. That's kind of where I'll leave my synopsis.
Just as an aside, I personally am a little upset that they just swapped out the season 4 with the remix. Because I'd like, you know, I'd kind of like to, like, compare them a little bit. But, like, if you go on Netflix right now, if you go on Netflix right now, they just have the remix.
No, I see both. I mean, I could check, like, right now, but as of watching it yesterday... As of watching it yesterday, I'll check though.
I think I only saw the remix when I was checking it out, but could be some minor thing on mine. But in the meantime, while you're fact checking me, I think I started watching the show. I started watching the show before the third season was over. I can't even remember this far back, to be honest. My memory is pretty cruddy. But I think my sister. So in 2006, I would have been like 12 Seven. Or 13. and I remember Arrested Development being the show that my sister and dad would watch, and my mom would just kind of, like, I think was, like, the most awful television show ever, and, like, teaching me the worst the world had to offer in terms of morality, which is probably accurate at this point. But I remember going through the first couple of seasons and, like, being pretty into it, and then by the time the third season, like, it took me forever to get through it. And I don't, like, the third season's really quality, and I've watched it a bunch of times since then. But I don't think I even finished it until I gave, like, a full rewatch before season 4 came out. And you know, season 4, like, that was one of those things where I think for Netflix, it was maybe one of, like, their first, like, and it was kind of like a trend, like, it was one of the first, like, you know, social media demanded reboots that came out, and it, like, I don't know, I think it gets a bad rap in certain ways. Like, watching the first 10 episodes was, like, kind of a labor of love for fans, and I feel like you didn't really get much, but I felt like in the end, like, when, like, especially, like, Job's storyline came together, and, like, when they're at Cinco de Cuatro, like, I thought the ending, like, kind of redeemed it, and, like, that's one of the things that I missed from season 5, just because we only got the first 8 episodes.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think also, like, by the way, you're right. I fact-checked you, and you are right. I don't find season 4. And I could have sworn that I remember seeing season 4 original and season 4 recap, like, less than a day ago. But right now, that is not the case.
That's crazy, by the way.
Yeah. They're like, forget that happened.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to watch the remix. But I... So season 4, we have to remember that like 10 years passed between the time that the show went off the air and the show went off the air and they came back to do this. So it was probably one of the most ambitious things Netflix has done, because it's a lot like, you know, when we back in the Lucas, you weren't here for this, but we've done this like little baby segment about me watching Star Wars for the first time and my feelings about Star Wars watching all of them back to back, as opposed to how someone feels spending 35 years of their life or whatever watching these movies, right? They feel like a real strong connection to Luke Skywalker, and seeing, you know, Hayden Christensen come in and do Anakin like is upsetting, and you know, I had much less strong feelings about that. So I feel like we had such high expectations. We love this show so much. It has such a strong cult following that to come back and try to do it no matter what, I think fans would have been disappointed. And you have to give them credit for kind of trying, even though it wasn't the best TV in the planet. It was very ambitious what they tried to do. And I think they're finding their footing now with season 5 a little bit more. Even though we only have 8 episodes, I agree with you. I would love to see more, you know, and have the whole thing there to kind of binge. But I think we're headed in the right direction with Arrested Development season 5, and I've been enjoying it at the very least. I think it's worth bringing up the news around all of this too. The
Absolutely.
New York Times interview. You want to do that, Anthony, or?
Sure, I can. I'll at least summarize initially. So Jeffrey Tambor obviously is one of the cast members of Arrested Development, and there was a lot of news around his role in Transparent. I think initially just some, you know, I think the way we talk and like view trans people in media has changed. So the idea of a cis man playing a trans woman was already kind of being criticized. And then all these stories came out about, you know, potentially abusive or harassing behavior that Tambor was, you know, allegedly guilty of on the Transparent set, and he was fired from the show. That was sort of all the background going into the press tour for Arrested Development. And then for some reason they thought it was still a good idea to have him go on the press tour. And so the New York Times does this group interview with a large portion of the cast, and at one point it comes up that, you know, one of the things that the Tambor himself had acknowledged was essentially verbally abusing the actress Jessica Walters. And both Tambor and Walters are in the room as this is happening. They're having this conversation, and she like apparently just starts crying because it was such a horrifying and upsetting experience for her, while all the other male cast members basically are in a sort of fumbling way talking over her and trying to justify it. And so,
with the exception of Will Arnett, I think it's important to point out that Will Arnett, while he didn't defend anyone, he remained pretty silent the whole time. The other male cast members chimed in, but he at least stayed out of it. Like, let's not lump him in. But yeah.
And I mean, that's basically, and so like they've said, you know, I think that Tambor's not going on the rest of the press tour, but like, just this has just been like cast such a shadow over that. Like if you, and certainly before watching these episodes, what I thought about was like, I had no idea what was, you know, actually going to happen in the 5th season of the show. All I knew was all the controversy over this New York Times article.
Yeah. And I mean, like the thing about the New York Times article is actually sheds a light on a kind of more widespread problem, I think, regarding like the Me Too movement and what's happening in Hollywood and in other industries, which is that, like, you know, I read a Slate article on it that was fantastic, and I'll maybe send it to one of you guys when you write up the story to put it in, because I think people should read it. But it essentially says, like, you know, Arrested Development, and to many guys in Hollywood, is it's a boys club, and they see, like, oh, their boy did this bad thing and is trying to make up for it. And I think in all honesty, they have had conversations with Jeffrey, and he's like, yeah, I screwed up, and I want to do better. I want to fix it. And they're so focused on that they can't see themselves talking over the actual victim, you know? And what Jason, you know, Jason Bateman in that interview is just, it was really horrifying. Well. Yeah, it really was bad. Like, I mean, he keeps saying, oh, we're a family. No, you're not. You're professionals who work together, you know? And if you are a family, then what Jessica Walter has to say is just as important, if not more important, than anything Jeffrey Tambor is trying to say. So it was just a very upsetting thing. And as someone who, like, you know, I love Arrested Development so long ago, this is pre, you know, Transparent News with Tambor. And I knew, like, when the Transparent News came out, knowing that season 5 was coming, I was like, you know, I don't know, you know, like, I want to watch it for everyone else. And it definitely casts a shadow. Even Maria's never seen Arrested Development before. And we listened to the New York Times article, or listened to the New York Times interview before we started even watching episode 1. And she was like, I don't know. I don't feel good about it. You know, that introduced it to her, whereas I've loved it for so long. But it was just it definitely casts a shadow over the whole thing. It kind of, I don't know if it helps that the plot for George Sr. is pretty pathetic. You know, he's not what he once was in season 5. So that helps a little bit, I guess. But yeah, it's very upsetting that all happened. And I think it definitely plays into how you view season 5 a little bit.
My deal with that interview, I think, was that I don't know, like, you know, the New York Times does those types of interviews before, like, high profile, like, movies or scenes, like, they do that with Star Wars and stuff like that. And I think that each time it's pretty much just like a, you know, time for all the cast to get around and, like, trade, like, good time memories and, like, get into all that. So I can see, like, maybe some of the male cast members being surprised that Jessica Walters went down that route, but I don't see that why they would be, because, like, that was of course going to get brought up. But I don't know, like, it was Jason Bateman came off looking pretty awful in that, but I also was thinking, like, you know, all these guys are just trying to course correct, like, an interview that may, like, seem like it's going off the rails when one of the main characters starts, like, crying and talking about, like, an awful experience with one of the older cast members. And they're kind of like, I don't know, Jason Bateman still kind of has a, like, career outside of the show.
I can guarantee you that the New York Times told that cast that they were going to talk about there's no way that they were not going to ask about it, and they were definitely prepared. I guarantee you that the cast knew that that question would come up, and I don't think that they knew that Jessica Walter would.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm sure they all knew what was, like, going down, and they were all prepared in their own way to, like, give some kind of, like, cagey, we're a family answer. And then when, you know, Jessica Walter showed all that emotion, they're kind of like, okay, but, like, you know, we do love each other. But it came off quite poorly. So, yeah, you know,
really did. And yeah. Jason Bateman and Tony Hale and Cross all apologize, but I think the damage is kind of done. My opinion of Jason Bateman has changed drastically. Let's just say that.
My opinion of David Cross has not changed in that it was always bad.
What did David Cross do that was so bad? I haven't, like, paid enough attention to him, but people have said he's always a jerk, and I just don't know. I just haven't paid enough attention, I guess.
I don't even remember where, but I feel like I've just listened to so many podcasts where it just comes off, like, sounding like a, you know, and he, like, God, I forget. There was something during the election, like, he was giving a podcast and talking about Trump's America, and he was just, like, absolutely brutal in his, like, talking about, like, Southern culture and, like, all his. I don't recall where, but he really sounded like an asshole, so that's all I think about him.
Well, but I think also to Jordan's point earlier is what's troubling about the interview is, I mean, certainly anyone who wants to write off Jason Bateman or David Cross as a result of that interview, I think, is certainly entitled to do so. But I think it also illustrates how you can seem like, by trying to seem like a reasonable person, by trying to be conciliatory, you end up, you know, implicitly, not necessarily even endorsing, but sort of apologizing for bad behavior. And you know, that by just sort of following these sort of stupid norms of like how you should like support, you know, all your cast members and stuff, you end up sort of supporting the perpetrator and not the victim. And so it's like an illustration also of how like you can see, not to justify what they said, but to say like, oh, I could see, whereas like, you know, you talk about a lot of the conversation on Me Too has been around these predators, and it's very easy to sort of demonize them and say, well, these people are monsters and they shouldn't you know, be working anymore, and in a lot of cases should be in jail. But it's also about all this other behavior from people who may not be predators themselves, but are, by just not taking a strong enough stand, are essentially abetting it.
Which seems to be the general problem. I think, like, not the general problem. Obviously, there's lots of harassment and stuff. But if, and I say this all the time, you know, like, we in the tech world, we see these female, all female panels talking about, you know, equality and, you know, getting rid of harassment in the workplace, et cetera. And if boys can't police each other, that's a strong word to use for it, but if men aren't going to talk to one another and say, no, I don't find this acceptable, you know, then it doesn't really matter. You know, it doesn't make a difference, because women can say and have been saying for years and years and years, like, don't treat me this way. But if men can't say like, yo, I saw that, don't talk like that, or don't say that, or don't do that, that's not cool, then it doesn't make a difference. And this is a prime example of, you know, four guys standing together and saying like, oh, we're a family, he's working on it, I have zero complaints about Jeffrey Tambor, while Jessica Walter cries, you know, and is saying, man, this room's full of testosterone. Yeah, it is, you know, it's a perfectly reasonable thing for her to say. So very upsetting. But let's focus on season five now that we've got the context of that interview kind of out in the open, and the shadow that it casts across the season. I'll say that, and a lot of the reviews say the same thing, the storytelling here is very heavy-handed, I guess, or labored. I don't exactly know, and we won't know. That's the thing, is the seasons in Arrested Development usually build to this kind of conclusion in a finale that might be unexpected, but at least it makes sense and it ties kind of all the pieces together. And since we only have 8 episodes, it's hard to know where that's going. Maybe it finishes really beautifully, but it seems very, you know, labored at the moment. But there are certain bits, and there are certain, you know, what makes Arrested Development special is the fact that every single line is a joke. Every single line you could laugh at. And I think they are pulling that off this season as well, which I'm glad to see. And I also think that what makes Arrested Development special is when you get more than two characters into a scene, two of these main characters into a scene, and get them chatting. And I think they're doing a better job of that, not a perfect job. There's not enough Lindsay, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, Portia de Rossi's kind of absent. Buster's a little bit absent. Buster's so good throughout. So it's hard for him to be gone for that long. But overall, I think they're doing a better job. And maybe Funke and George Michael are still fantastic, like just as good as ever, if not way better. I mean, maybe could be the star of this whole thing, to be honest.
One thing that surprised me was like how the show is, that given that the reception to season four was really mixed, I was expecting them to treat this, and obviously the format returns to the format of previous seasons, but I was expecting them to treat this as more of like a, you know, not a hard reboot, but like a kind of, hey, we're like changing course. And it felt like in a lot of ways, like it was picking up a lot of the plot threads from season four, at least just judging from like the amount of flashbacks and things like that. That like, and it was just kind of keeping them going. And so as somebody who was like trying to jump back into it, it was definitely a case where the first episode in particular was pretty rough going. And then as the plot became more of its own thing, then I was able to enjoy it more.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought it was hilarious how they did that switch. And like, that was interesting because, you know, it's worth saying that, you know, all these characters have aged 4 or 5 years in between the past season. And I thought it was hilarious how they did the scene where George Michael had just punched Michael in the first episode, and they directly stitched the footage from last year into the new season, and like, I don't know, Michael Cera just like gets older and his like hairline recedes a little bit and his hair changes, and like, you know, Jason Bateman's looking a little bit more wrinkly and older, but it just like, it goes straight into it and you're just like, this is how this season is going to go. Just accept it. Everyone looks older. That's how it works. I thought that was like, I don't know. I thought that was kind of a funny part of the season, because going back after finishing season 5, I like watched the pilot and the first couple episodes of season 1 yesterday. And it was, you know, these characters, like, this has been, you know, especially for, you know, Michael Cera and, you know, whoever plays maybe, this has been a show that's been with them like their whole lives, basically.
Yeah, they were kids.
Yeah.
They've matured a lot. Like, their acting skills have, I mean, Michael Cera, I think, was always fantastic in the first 3 seasons. I think that's what made him such a star that he is today. Maybe she wasn't bad by any stretch. She was great in the early seasons, but I think she's really, like, matured as an actress and really come into her own and owns that character and owns exactly what you'd expect maybe to grow up into, right? Which is like a very brilliant con artist. And she does it so well. She does it even when she's caught in a lie. She's, you know, you can tell she's caught in a lie, but she's handling it. I don't know. She's really funny and great in this season. And it's shocking to me that they've kept up the cousins in love thing for so long.
Les cousins dangereux.
yeah, dangerous cousins. I was actually watching an earlier season like a few days ago, and it's the one where Maybe walks in and she's like, hey, do you remember that movie we tried to sneak into a while ago, like Dangerous Cousins? And George Michael is like, it's like, meanwhile, George Michael has a copy of Dangerous Cousins in his sock drawer, and he like almost falls out of his chair to try to shut the sock drawer. It's just so funny, man. The show is so good. I don't necessarily like that they've integrated Ron Howard like 100% into the show. I know that started in season 4, but I liked him as this like weird unknown narrator, and now he's like there, you know?
Yeah, I think like the, I don't know, like the Deadpool fourth wall movie style, like it feels a little weird with Ron Howard. And, you know, I don't know his background at whatever the movie company is, and his partner that he like referenced all the time. So it was kind of a situation where, yeah, I'd imagine. So it's kind of a situation where I was like, okay, like, you know, it's kind of funny, but like, I'm not sure.
I just think you get like Michael, Lindsay, Job, and Buster in the same room, and Lucille, to be honest, and you get them all in the same room. Those are the episodes that are the funniest. Like, there's a scene from an old episode where they try to throw an intervention for Lucille, and they all get scared about, you know, what if she gets angry? So they all start drinking. And she comes in and they're like, it ended up being one of the Blues' most fun parties. And you just see all of them doing crazy shit in this room. And it's so funny. Like, you got, getting them together is the most important thing, because they feed off of each other, you know? And just it means that one joke runs directly into the next. And I don't know. I feel like we really need to, we might have to revisit this when we get the rest of the episodes, to be honest, because I feel like an Arrested Development season, each episode individually is always great and a pleasure, but I feel like to really understand how good or bad season 5 is, we're going to have to see all of it, you know, because it just, the story, what's cool about it is like they play out this plot in front of you episode by episode, and you see exactly all of the moving pieces as they're happening, and the outcome is still relatively unexpected. And you have to get to the finale for that, I think. You know, you really have to get to the finale to see what the plot twist is going to be, what really, truly unexpected thing is going to happen. That was even true in season 4, I think.
So, I mean, one other thing I'm curious about in terms of, was we were talking about like the fourth wall breaking, and there's also this other element of it, which is that obviously not all the actors were available for the entire filming. And so they turn it into this kind of running joke of you know, random people kind of standing in and in some cases, like, impersonating other characters. Did that work for you guys?
You mean in season four?
No, I think that was picking up that thread, but that was a big element of this one, too, where, like, David Cross is constantly, like, playing himself. Playing other characters.
I don't think it worked for me, to be honest. And I think that the Tobias character is the most kind of flawed one in this whole season because they're trying so hard to give him a reason to still be in it. And he's such a gem. Like, the confusion of him just generally is so good. The whole stint where he played Featherbottom, the maid, was just like some classic amazing television. So I think they just want him there so badly that they're forcing it a little bit. And I think that's I don't think it's as much about him standing in for characters when they're gone, although that's part of it, as it is just we want Tobias. Do you know what I mean? Like, Tobias is best as Tobias, and pulling him out of that is upsetting. You know?
Yeah, and I think that, like, what has made past seasons so successful is the, you know, some of these characters aren't really great as standalone characters for their own storylines, and they work better when they're with, you know, kind of tagged onto somebody else's. And I thought that, you know, in this season, Job, like, you know, I he didn't really have a storyline. It was just playing out, you know, this past seasons where I think his culminated as one of the more, like, entertaining ones. But this season, like, the only one he's really interacting with is George Senior, and that storyline, like, you know, petered out and was just like there for like a couple jokes at the beginning.
Job and Michael are best together. They're right, exactly. Perfect complements to one another, you know.
Yeah, and that just wasn't really there in this season. And the same with Tobias. Like, I mean, he was around. Tobias, I think, was my biggest disappointment of the season. To be honest, like, his storyline, because he just adds so much to all the other seasons, and this one just felt a little forced to me. But I mean, they always feel forced, but they're like they were pulled off more successfully in earlier seasons, I think.
Yeah, and I think, like, the same thing with Lindsay and Lucille are so good together, you know, and we didn't get very much of that. We got a lot of Lucille with Tobias, which I think is like an odd pairing. So I think just the way they ensemble things is going to be big.
Did anyone else notice how, like, cruddy the editing was in a lot of the season?
Like, in terms of, like the audio between, like, different shots and stuff.
Yeah, totally. Like, they would just, like, they just throw in B-roll of, like, some character facing another character, and then they'd play their lines, and it was clear the person was saying something else. And they'd even have it, like, in the shot where their, like, lips were, like, moving to having said something different. I was just kind of like, wow, this really is kind of like a shoddy production. And then, I don't know, at least they like didn't have as much time with the actors as they needed. But like there are a few times where I was just like looking at it and I was like, ew.
And some weird green screen too in there. Like, there's a scene where Michael and Job are in the studio and like are in the lobby of Imagine. And it's just like the worst green screen I think I've ever seen. It's like, why is that? Why do you have a bad green screen? Unless that itself is supposed to be a joke. I don't know.
You never know.
I do think it's a thin line where, obviously, I think definitely the cutting from, like, stuff shot 5 years ago and the stuff shot more recently is, like, very intentionally funny. And, it, like, I like the fact that it's really mismatched and they sort of embrace it. Kind of the same way the summer camp, Wet Hot American Summer, like, TV shows, like, embrace just the completely unrealistic aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And so that's fine. But then it also, at the same time, feels like there's some things where they just didn't have the time or the money or whatever to actually make it good.
Yeah, and I don't understand that either. I mean, whatever, I understand it. But I guess, like, I don't understand why they just released 8 episodes of this. I feel wronged as a viewer that I go through 8 episodes and then it, like, shows me another show to watch. Like, that's not how Netflix was supposed to work. I was supposed to be able to binge the entire season. And, like, and that's especially important with Arrested Development because, like, it's all about the culmination and the finale. Like, that's how it's been for, you know, that's how it majorly was for the last season. Like, I got nothing out of seeing the first, like, you know, 15 episodes. And then the last 3 were just, like, in my opinion, awesome. But here, I, like, 8 episodes in, they're at that dumb, you know, July 4th festival, July 2nd of the 4th festival. And I'm just kind of like, yeah, like what am I getting here? And I'm like, how are they going to wrap this stuff up? And I came from the bad place that I didn't, you know, read that this was only the first half of the season. So when I watched it, I was like, what the hell? I was like, is that it?
Then you'll have to wait another 5 years.
Do we know why they did that? Does anybody have an explanation?
I mean, I wonder if it's just like that's, you know, they were wanting to hit this date and they had, you know, 8 episodes ready. Or I could imagine that, you know, 16 episodes is a lot to release at once. I mean, a lot of these Netflix seasons are 13 episodes and that also feels like a lot. So I can, and they started to do that with some of the other shows, like The Get Down, where they would just do half a season. Because I think also sometimes creators, they want to have like, you know, I think there's sometimes this complaint if you release like a new season of a Netflix show is everyone talks about it for a week and then you all kind of forget about it. And so if you do two different releases, you're at least getting two of those little hits.
That's what I was curious about, like whether or not it's a time crunch issue or it's a like a strategic move. I think if it's a strategic move, it's probably not in the best interest of the show. I get what you're saying about like the two kind of traffic spikes, but I don't know. I don't think it like improves the quality of the viewing experience in any way. But if it's a time crunch, I kind of get that. Or if it's like wanting to hear, I think especially with season 5, like it's been 2 years since season 4, which was big flub. It's been 12 years since the end of season 3, which was also wasn't their best work. It could be like a feedback opportunity. I don't think they can reshoot anything necessarily, but they could edit, you know, and make some changes there based on feedback. So maybe it's that. I don't really know. But if it was just to get, you know, more hype for a longer period of time, I disagree with that decision.
Maybe they were just like, we'll get for the first half, we'll get rid of all the, you know, the negative press surrounding Jeffrey Tambor. We'll address it all in this great New York Times interview that's going to go fantastically. And then we're going to release the first 8 episodes and then we'll come back with a, you know, vengeance for the second half and it'll be smooth sailing into the arms of history.
I still am so confused by the press strategy of sending Tambor out on this press. Like that just seems so like such a complete, like you have to be in such complete denial about like what the atmosphere is right now to think that is like even remotely a good idea.
I agree with you, but here's what I think happened. They thought from the Hollywood Reporter thing that was a very friendly interview and it really gave him an opportunity to kind of say what he wanted to say without a lot of extra input. And he confessed kind of to this situation with Jessica Walter. And I think they had this idea that the more Jeffrey gets to kind of say, I'm sorry and that I'm working on it, the better things will go for the show overall. And I don't think they expected, I hope, honestly, that there's not a lot of fallout for Jessica with the show and with the creators and with Netflix because of what happened. Because I could really, really see them blaming her for that. But I think that was the plan. I don't think that they were expecting that to go the way that it did. I think they were expecting him to be like, yeah, I did. You know, I messed up and I'm sorry. And it is my burden to carry and I'm really working on it, you know, and then Jessica Walter started crying. So it kind of got screwed up, that plan.
Yeah, I think you're right. I will say, so I've mostly said negative things about the 5th season is that I actually did mostly enjoy it. I mean, obviously it's not picking it up again is not necessarily the ideal circumstance, but I think after the first couple episodes, I especially liked George Michael's like sojourn in Mexico and like all these like weird jokes about how he's obviously not having like sort of an authentic Mexican experience, I thought were really good. And then when maybe in the nursing home and dressed up as an old woman, but not that old, I thought was just also really, really well done.
I think that was my favorite storyline of the season, or, you know, thus far. Like I thought maybe really killed it. That was pretty hilarious. Also, what's his face? The guy with the who can't grow hair. No idea. But that was kind of a funny dynamic with them. Also, I thought, that one seemed the most well thought out to me. And it was kind of weird too that it was the youngest characters who I thought had the most going for them. Like Kyle Mooney, who's now Tobias's son. was kind of out of nowhere. That was a little bit of a...
What does he keep calling him too? Murphy Brown?
Oh, and we should say Aaliyah Shawkat is the actress who plays Maybe. I know earlier we couldn't remember her name.
I know, something like that. She also, to her credit, and not to like linger as much as we already have on this interview, but she it was the only one who stood up during that interview and said, no, it's never acceptable to yell at people like that. What you did was unacceptable. While all the dudes were like, we're family and I have zero complaints and this is, you know, this is what happens. And what we do is just so freaking special that we get to yell just at each other. It's just so bizarre what happens on a set. You just really don't understand what happens on a set. It's just a bunch of dudes screaming at each other. I'm sorry, screaming at women, not each other. We would never yell at each other. Yeah. Anyway, I like season 5. I think it's a step in the right direction. I would have loved to see, like, Lucille is always and forever will be my favorite character on Arrested Development. She's so quick and funny and amazing. And if I can get her to wink just once in an episode, it's worth it. her wink is iconic. And I wish that I hope that in the second half, they put her kind of back to her old self. I feel like she's a little different in season 5. She's got a lot of stuff happening with Tobias, and I want her back to criticizing and confusing and manipulating her children. That's where she shines, and I want more of that. But otherwise, I would say that great step in the right direction.
Speaking of Lucille, I was very much missing the presence of Liza Minnelli in this season. As Lucille too.
Yeah, Liza Minnelli is pretty fantastic. I kind of like forgot how all of season 4 played out. Is she actually dead?
It was unclear, but like they made it seem like she was pretty dead. so like how they're all playing it like super ambiguously, I think is kind of a funny. I don't know. Like I feel like, you know, they had such a short amount of time. Like this first 8 episodes just was like 4 hours of playtime. That the jokes they revisited, you know, 5 or 6 times, there weren't too many of them. But I felt like every time like they asked like, "Where's Lucille too?" I like kind of freaked out.
Yeah. I would like more of the recurring jokes. I don't really notice them as tying into the original 3 seasons. Did you guys? I mean, I've made a huge mistake, came up a couple times. But, like, I didn't really see as many of the recurring jokes as they used to have, which was one of the strengths of the show.
Right. It seemed like they were trying to build, again, obviously I'm not an expert, but my sense is they were trying to build new recurring jokes, most of which were just sort of tired. And so that was sort of strange, that it used to be like a show that was so good at like each time it came up, it was actually funnier. And this time with like certain things about like Joe being in denial about his sexuality and things like that, it was just like, yeah, no, we get it. It's not, you don't have to bring it up 10 times.
What's the likelihood that we see a Job-Tobias relationship?
God, I hope
and
zero.
That's not saying that two gay guys put in a room will fall in love, trust me, but is that where it's headed? Maybe. I don't know.
Tony Wonder is the only man for Job.
Yeah, clearly he loves him. Oh,
did somebody
God.
Say Wonder?
It's actually nice to see Job like have feelings yeah. other than my dad and brother are disappointed in me, you know, like that's been like the cornerstone of his character for ever, and now he's like expanding beyond that emotionally, even though I don't feel like they used Will Arnett to his full potential this season or thus far this season. It's nice to see him pine for love from Tony Wonder.
I did, yeah, I think Will Arnett was like criminally underutilized this season, and that, like, you know, he's so hilarious. But I did love the scene where they're in like the bodega or whatever. No, they're in like the space lander thing, and he's on the phone, and in there stuck with Kitty, and he's like, "I do not want to have sex with you," and then he's like talking on the phone in a hushed tone with Tony Wonder. I thought that was pretty quality.
I liked the opening scene with Job, where he was in the bodega in Mexico, and was asking for, I think, Rohypnol. Yeah, and he's like, "I just did something and I need to forget it." Like, he's like, "You've come in here many times before," and he's like, "No, no, I just need this for the, you know." It's just this classic Job. I also love, I don't know if this was from this season or from an older season, but when Job says, "You really pulled a J-O-B'd are a geobead. And Michael's like, a geobead? And he's like, yeah, that's what Dad used to say, you know, when someone would really mess up, that they pulled a geobead. It's like one of those, you'll figure it out when you figure it out type things, you know? But I finally figured it out. You're a geobead. He's like, so confused. Oh, poor Job.
I like, you know, that was like the matriarch and patriarch of the family, like, seemed pretty absent this season. And like, George's storyline was like my least favorite. And yeah, they were just trying so hard with it. And then Lucille just wasn't in it enough. Like, or like, at least I don't think was like given enough of a role. I guess she was, you know, present in a lot of the scenes, but like, I don't know. There's a little bit of like magic missing there, I felt like. But yeah, George Sr.'s storyline is just like, okay, like, where is this going to go? And then when there was like the payoff, so to say, of like, oh, this isn't Viagra, it's, you know, estrogen pills. Like, you're just like, okay, like, great job, guys.
Shocking. Move on now. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, glad that's over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, good try. Good effort.
Step in the right direction.
Yeah, step in the right direction. I'll keep watching, obviously. I don't know if I could, that's a controversial thing to say, so I'm not going to say it.
You don't know if you could deal with this season six?
No, I was just saying, like, I don't know what would have to happen for me to not watch Arrested Development. I'm sure that things could happen that would make me not want to watch it, and I definitely feel very differently about Jason Bateman, and, you know, definitely feel differently about Jeffrey Tambor after what happened with Transparent. But I love Jessica Walter, and I love Portia de Rossi, and I love Michael Cera and Aaliyah Shawkat.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it's pronounced, but yeah.
But yeah, I love them so much, and Will Arnett, that like it's hard to, I don't want to leave them. I want to keep watching them. So I'm excited, generally.
I don't know. It's really hard to say, like, because as we've said throughout this whole thing, like, it is so much about the payoff at the end. I personally was like, I think maybe controversial, but I like the direction they were going in season four a little bit than this, because I think, you know, 10 years had passed, and it was kind of interesting to see them go and, like, a way that felt more like a reunion season, where it was like not really the exact same energy, but now in season five, like, it doesn't feel like they're throwing all they can at it because all of the actors aren't there at the same time. So it feels like it's strained, like, and not for creative reasons. It's just like a logistical problem, which kind of like the magic feels a little lost when you think about it too much.
Yeah, like one of the best seasons or one of the best episodes or scenes in season five is when the whole family is in Lucille 2's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep falling off the chairs, and Lindsay's in the background trying to do her congressional video. And, you know, Michael's saying, I'm leaving, pack your things, you know, and gets punched in the face.
Tobias is like, I'm leaving.
Yeah, he's trying to mimic Michael. I mean, that's
when they're standing next to each other. That's
Job has his newscaster girlfriend there. You know, it's quality TV. I think the only thing missing is Buster. Right? Buster's not in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And George Michael, although he shows up sort of in a little sort of tag for it.
Yeah. Anyway, well, good stuff with season five overall. Good, not great, is how I would put it. And we'll see what happens with the other eight episodes. And I will add that my feelings towards Jason Bateman upset me partially, because I love Ozark so much. And, like, you can justify Arrested Development because there's so many other people in it, awesome actors and good content there. And I don't know, Ozark's coming back, I think, soon. And I love it so much. You guys never talked about it, did you? Or we did.
Like, we did, first episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you watch Ozark, Lucas?
I do not. I've had a couple people tell me to watch it, but it's kind of low down on my list of my to-do list of TV. Is it like worthwhile?
Yeah, it definitely is. It's like one of my favorite things Netflix has ever done, for sure. It's like, if you like Breaking Bad, you should love this.
Okay. I felt like with that interview, like, I don't know. I don't I think the only other thing other than this that I've seen Jason Bateman in is that awful spelling bee movie, Bad Words, if either of you saw that.
I did not.
Okay. It was like, I'm pretty sure it like racked at 20% on Rotten Tomatoes. But I guess I don't, like, if it had been something that happened to like Will Arnett or Michael Cera, who I have like a, like an intimate connection to all of the things they've made over the years, like that would be super upsetting to me. So in hearing how much you like Ozarks, like I can see.
Yeah, it hurts a little bit. I think Jason Bateman was also in that movie Identity Thief, which I thought was really crappy, like considering that it had Melissa McCarthy and Jason Bateman in it. It definitely should have been better than it was. Anyway, I think we're done, right? We're just kind of droning on at this point.
I think we are. So just before we wrap up, I'll remind listeners that they can subscribe on Apple Podcasts. They can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on most other podcast apps. And thanks, everyone, for listening. And thanks, Lucas, for joining us. Hopefully, we can have you back soon. And then also when the next 8 episodes come on.
Perfect.
Thanks, Lucas. Thank you, listeners.
Bye, guys.
Bye.